This is the way it feels to move through summer in Lululemon. Iconic align softness without the front seam. For our smoothest look and feel ever, summer won't know what hit it. Stretch your limits in the non-stop flexibility of the new Lululemon Align No Line Pant in select stores and at lululemon.com.
Hi everyone, welcome to the Value Inspiration Podcast. My name is Ton Dobber and I'm the founder of Value Inspiration. The purpose of my company is to help business software companies rethink what can be to become remarkable again. The goal that I have with this podcast is to inspire new forms of value creation by sharing compelling ideas and stories about the potential that we can unlock when technology and people blend in the right way. So my strong belief is that we can think big, and therefore we should. And doing so will help to create a better world for all of us. And this podcast is all about that. My guest on the podcast this week is Alex Zavoronkov, CEO of InSilico Medicine.
Aging is one of the more major challenges that humanity is facing today. The population has tripled over the past 70 years, and the population also got older. So we need to identify new ways to keep people in their optimal healthy state for as long as possible, just to ensure that the economy remains intact. There is lots and lots of data available for aging research, but AI takes it to the next level. So it basically accelerates everything. So think about this as a carriage versus Formula One. If you are pursuing aging research and you find a way to extend the life of everybody on the planet by 1 year, you generate 7 billion, well, 7.5 billion quality adjusted life years.
This is Alex. He's the CEO of InSilico Medicine, which is exclusively focused on developing and applying deep learning methods to drug discovery. It's probably the largest next generation AI and bioinformatics company in the world, focusing exclusively on aging and age-related diseases. Alex is also the director of the Biogerontology Research Foundation and the founder of the International Aging Research Portfolio. He heads the Laboratory of Regenerative Medicine at the CPHOI and is the International Adjunct Professor at the Moscow Institute of Physics and Technology. As an anti-aging expert, he is convinced that even people past their 70s who are in good health have a good chance to live past 150. And this inspired me to invite Alex to my podcast, to explore how technology can be used to accelerate progression in this field, how it can augment researchers around the world to create breakthroughs that will ultimately increase longevity for all of us. And during the interview, you will learn 4 things. Firstly, why the best innovations start with the end goal in mind. Secondly, how, by clearly defining your business model upfront, you can avoid delays and unpleasant surprises. Thirdly, why data privacy is becoming the critical aspect to innovation success. And lastly, why it is key to surround yourself with like-minded people who share the same passion and are not just in for the money. To get the podcast started, Alex, can you give a little bit of background about yourself and about your company?
So, Alex Zavoronkov, I'm the CEO of InSilico Medicine, a Baltimore-based artificial intelligence company focusing on drug discovery. I am also the chief science officer of the Biogerontology Research Foundation, a UK-based charity focused on aging research.
Aging research, okay, that's interesting. So where does this come from? What is your passion? What drives you around this industry?
So my passion is, of course, aging research in every way, shape, and form. And since aging is a very multifactorial and multidisciplinary process, I have to touch many areas of science and technology, primarily artificial intelligence, because it allows us to encompass a lot of those multifaceted processes that transpire during aging. Yeah. I think that aging is one of the major challenges that humanity is facing today, because there is just more people than it used to be. So the population has tripled over the past 70 years, and the population also got older. So we need to identify new ways to keep people in their optimal healthy state for as long as possible, just to ensure that the economy remains intact. So that's primarily driving my passion for aging research and artificial intelligence. Another really important point, and kind of the fact that I was one of the first to uncover, is that every living organism, every chemical entity, every molecule, everything in this world has age. So we are all different, but we all have age. And when you train the deep neural networks, it's a very, very good feature to train predictors on. So you basically train the deep neural networks to predict the age of anything. And the deep neural network captures a lot of very relevant, and when it comes to biology, biologically relevant features. So it kind of drives my passion for artificial intelligence, the fact that you can pretty much harmonize almost anything with just one feature, age. I think we are our age.
Yeah, your website says our mission is to extend healthy longevity through innovative AI solutions for drug discovery and aging research. So your solution, how long has it been on the market yet?
So we have multiple solutions. Some solutions are on the market for a while, but many of those are still in development. So we do specialize in two types of artificial intelligence. So one is we develop new methods in artificial intelligence for classification, prediction, but also for generation of new data sets. And another form of AI is applied artificial intelligence. So we develop biomarkers using AI, and also we discover new drugs, new molecules using AI. And some of those technologies, like, for example, age predictors and some of the predictors of disease status, are already on the market for over a year. Some are currently in development. And of course, we do have nutraceuticals on the market. So people who are already buying some of the natural products developed by our AI. And we have lots of molecules that we've discovered that might be good pharmaceutical products. And those are being licensed to the pharmaceutical companies.
Yeah. What I believe is there's a technology component, but what is the thing around drug discovery?
Drug discovery, we actually pioneered one field in drug discovery. So we were kind of the first to publish, first to experiment, first to validate, and first to license those molecules. So we rely on a very new technology in artificial intelligence called generative adversarial networks. Okay. So this is the technology which allows you to not only classify or predict like many other techniques in AI, but actually generate new stuff. So we make neural networks imagine new molecular structures with specific sets of characteristics. So I can basically, instead of looking for a needle in a haystack and going through large chemical libraries, I can just generate a perfect needle from scratch with the desired set of characteristics. And in this area, we kind of made pioneering moves. Just one group at Harvard, Alana Spurugodzic's laboratory, some very brilliant people, brilliant minds. They also have the claim to fame in that particular area, the application of GANs to drug discovery. But that's the area of AI for drug discovery that I am specifically passionate about. I think that this is going to be the future, and that's going to be transforming the pharmaceutical industry in so many ways, because you can essentially embed those GANs into drug discovery pipelines, and it's a very valuable Lego block that solves a lot of problems.
Okay, so you can create the perfect needle, as you say. But so what do you then do with that outcome? How is that then taken to market, and how does it provide value?
So in pharmaceutical industry, it's unlike in many others, unlike in information technology, it's not possible to just create something and start selling. So you really need to go through multiple stages of validation to ensure that it's safe, very, very important. So it needs to be safe, and B, it needs to be effective. And it needs to be effective on a population scale, or you need to find novel ways to personalize your molecule to a specific population group. So this process is very lengthy, And sometimes takes, you have to be prepared to be in the game for years or even decades. And what we are doing with those molecules after we generate them in silico, so meaning in a computer, we synthesize those molecules. So we ask our contract research organizations that we work with to synthesize those molecules. Then we send those molecules to different sets of contract research organizations that test those molecules in human cell lines and in animals. And then we patent, and then we usually publish research papers and try to license those molecules to pharmaceutical and biopharmaceutical companies. So we don't want to actually sell those ourselves.
And the end result at the end is that it can influence people aging or the longevity of people.
So most of the molecules that we discover are focused on age-related diseases. So not necessarily on the fundamental aging processes. So we are attacking the metabolic diseases, so things like diabetes and all kinds of other forms of metabolic diseases. We specifically like to go after muscle wasting, after sarcopenia, so muscle wasting during aging. We also like to focus on all kinds of dermatological conditions, like androgenic alopecia, rosacea, alopecia areata, so hair loss, and also all kinds of dyspigmentations of the skin, psoriasis, so some autoimmune diseases. And of course, we most of the focus that the company is taking is cancer. And primarily, those are not pediatric cancers, not something that happens in kids, but adult cancers. And we try to go after the cancer itself, but also we try to deconvolute the aging signatures from the signatures of disease. Very often, these are the same signatures or similar signatures, but we always try to kind of extract that difference.
So in essence, it's that you extend the life of people that are healthy, but it's typically extending the life chance of people that have particular disease or prevent it from happening in the first place, correct?
Exactly correct. So our approach to drug discovery and aging research is that we need to be very credible. So we credibility and reputation is more important than anything else, because in this industry, it's very easy to make the wrong step and get into the kind of snake oil category, because there has been so many stories, so many scientists, so many charlatans who came before and tried to cure aging using all kinds of interventions. So anti-aging is pretty much a swear word in many areas. Doesn't really associate with something that is credible. So we try to be in the realm of credible, try to work with very credible partners, with academic institutions, and with all kinds of pharmaceutical companies to discover new drugs against age-related diseases. But of course, some of those could be in the future repurposed for aging.
Wow. So that makes me wonder, because I mean, research has been done for a long, long time. If there was no such thing as AI, would this be possible at all? Or is this something that has just come to the surface as an opportunity because of the compute powers and the fact that you can sort of calculate the outcome right now rather than searching for it?
Well, aging research has been around for a very, very long time. So people have been going after aging for centuries, you know, and some people committed their lives to aging research, like Ponce de Leon, who was looking for the fountain of eternal youth. But and of course, there has been huge progress made in aging research over the past 50 years after genomic sequencing techniques became available. And of course, the technology advanced in general, so more people joined the research community. And there is lots and lots of data available for aging research, but AI takes it to the next level. So it basically accelerates everything. So think about this as a carriage versus Formula One. So you can... You can still get from point A to point B, but you can do so many things in Formula One that you cannot do with, you know, carriage racing. And of course, you get to enjoy it.
Yeah, because you can very easily get results. You can test them and move on with other alternatives. And likely, that's also where, for example, machine learning comes in place to figure out all those things ahead of time already.
Absolutely. And Also, your program is about inspiration and about motivation and about how people are passionate about what they do. I think that aging research in general and biogerontology and associated areas are the most altruistic areas anyone can pursue. So I actually try to motivate myself by very, very simple pragmatic logic and basic life economics. So there is a term called quality adjusted life year. It's essentially a year of life in perfect health. And when you are planning to do something, when you're trying to evaluate the various possibilities in terms of what you want to do in your life or in your day or in this year, you can always do it in terms of the number of quality adjusted life years you produce. So if you are a doctor, for example, and you save 10 people's lives in a year, or maybe like 15 or 20, let's say every one of those lives will result in, every one of those saves will result in, let's say, 50 quality adjusted life years. So you save, let's say, 10 patients, you get 500 qualies. But if you are pursuing aging research and you find a way to extend the life of everybody on the planet by 1 year, you generate 7 billion, well, 7.5 billion quality adjusted life years. So it's very, very huge impact that you are making on the population. So of course, it's more risky. So it's the possibility that you are not going to add a minute to anybody is very high. But I would say that's the most important and most promising and most fruitful area to focus on.
I would say so, yeah, definitely. I mean, for anybody, a week more or a year more, what could you do? That's all dependent, of course, what your ambitions are.
Exactly.
Yeah, but I mean, that is really the scale you're talking about, right? Like, for potentially improving the quality of life in years for everybody on the planet.
Exactly. So that's the most important area to focus on. And as you know, I mean, what would be your guess? What is the average life expectancy on the planet today? So I'm talking about for every country, including the developing countries.
65 years, 70 years?
Very good. So it's actually like closer to 72. So it's increasing very, very rapidly, even in the developing countries where previously life expectancy was, less than 50 years.
Exactly.
So technology is propagating, and if the technology is available that can extend the lifespan of everybody on the planet, it will propagate very quickly.
So when do you expect that these effects kick in? Of course, there has been a lot of research already, and some products are already on the market, but the real big impact areas we're talking about here.
So I think it could take a few decades before we really feel the tangible effects of those technologies. Of course, just welfare, just increases in welfare all over the planet will result in major increases in life expectancy, because that's the main contributing factor and the main feature that drives longevity. And you can see that some of the countries with longest living people, longest living population are the wealthiest country. Countries. So you see, Monaco and Andalus and many, many countries and regions where you just have substantial wealth accumulated. That's where you get major effects on longevity. And I think to really propagate some of those technologies globally, you need to have increases in welfare all over the planet. So currently those technologies are available very asymmetrically. So the poorest do not have access to those medical treatments. And I'm talking about just some of the very basic longevity interventions. And of course, some of the, anti-cancer, anti-CNS, anti-metabolism, metabolic diseases, drugs. So initially, we're going to see major impact in the developed countries. And then we're going to see it in the other developing countries.
So what does it has to do with? I mean, I was speaking to a person from the from Seattle, Global Good Fund, I think it's called.
Good Ventures, maybe?
Yeah, Intellectual Ventures.
Oh, okay.
And he was talking about what he called catalytic invention. That was all about the three A's. That the technology that is being created is applicable, affordable, and available. So the availability part, of course, is a big issue with regards to the underdeveloped countries, development countries. And that, of course, the distribution. That's I think, also why you're saying that the effects will first kick in the developed countries, because there's much more access and much more knowledge about these things to make use of it. Correct?
Correct. But that might not be necessarily a bad thing, because at this point of time, people are, like a lot of people who are also pursuing altruistic endeavors, are trying to go into developing countries and trying to extend longevity there. In many ways, I think those countries would probably benefit more from education initially, sure. Because right now, and we actually should focus on technologies that might not necessarily be as affordable to make impact in those regions immediately, but they need to have major effects on human health, even if they are deployed initially in developed countries, to ensure that people see it and believe it and adopt it. And later those technologies can be either miniaturized or made less expensive and propagated into the developing countries. Because technology that is really at the forefront of our time is usually quite expensive. So we're looking at some of the molecules that we come up with, they are just, you know, difficult to synthesize. So if you synthesize a gram, you are likely to use it for experiments and not for distribution in the developing countries. So initially, the first push needs to be in the developed countries.
Exactly. So can you explain shortly the journey from the aha moment till the time that you started releasing things?
So for me, that has been a very gradual journey. So it wasn't just aha and let's go. I took a lot of calculated risks and we looked at multiple technologies. The real aha moment came in 2014 after we switched all of our pipelines to deep learning. So that was a major breakthrough moment for us. And the stars aligned and our background in GPU computing really played off nicely. And in 2014-2015, deep learning systems started outperforming humans. So you got superhuman accuracy in image recognition, voice recognition, text. And in 2015-2016, we started seeing those generative adversarial networks coming to life and showing us novel images generated specifically by AI. Uh-huh. So once that happened and technology really started advancing very rapidly in deep learning, for us it was the real aha moment. And we basically started pushing into this direction with everything we've got. So for some of the technologies that we have, it took just half a year from invention and the aha moment to market. So some of the aging clocks, for example, are already available online that you can test in principle. So you go to aging.ai and you can upload your recent blood test and it will predict your age. We don't make money on this, so it's a free system. And yes, and there is also a system called young.ai where you can upload multiple data types to guess your age and kind of plot your age predictions over time. So that system also took about a year to develop, and right now we're testing it. We're not selling it, but it's already available for testing by people. And for some technologies that resulted in nutraceuticals, so it took us about a year and a half to put products on the market and partner with some of the nutraceutical vendors to develop and market those products. So right now, a lot of people are taking our nutraceuticals.
Yeah, interesting. So getting towards the end of the podcast, what are the key lessons that you've learned so far? What advice would you give other researchers or business people that are thinking about these big innovations and using AI in this respect? What advice would you give them?
So to the researchers, I would make several comments. First is if you are planning to start a business, it's very worthwhile to spend some time planning and thinking about your business model. Because if you don't have a defined business model with a very clear outcome in terms of revenue flow, you will get into trouble later on. So, and we realized that several times, because then you have to switch the business model and it becomes much more difficult to fundraise and also to operate. So the planning phase needs to be extended. If you are going after age-related diseases or applying AI for to healthcare, it is important to actually spend some time thinking about how you work with the data and how to avoid working with personal data from patients, and work more with the data that is either synthetic or anonymized. So in our case, we had to work very, very, very diligently to ensure that we are not breaching any privacy rules.
So, I've heard it before, yeah.
So ensuring patient privacy and safety, that's the most important part. So and spending time on that really pays off. And third is find really good partners who can support you financially and can be with you for a long time, who share the same passion. So when you work with venture capitalists or partners who are in it for just the money, it is becoming very difficult. And sometimes people want quick exits and it will destroy your business and your value. So it's important to work with like-minded partners.
Completely agree. So what's next for you? What is your next big thing that that you believe should be on your top list, your top priorities?
Well, our priorities have not changed. In silico is my main area of focus. We started looking a lot at the intersection of AI and blockchain technologies as well, where we identify new ways to share data, because for AI, you really need to have a lot of data. So we are identifying new ways to share data with our peers, with our customers, with our collaborators, with our suppliers, and also across the industry. So looking at ecosystems of data sharing. So
you're working with Bitfury, right?
Yes, we're working with Bitfury to identify new ways to put all kinds of data on blockchain. So Bitfury is one of the top names in this field.
Exactly. They're an excellent platform. Good. So if there's anything you could ask the audience, what would you like them to consider or to come back with you?
Any help for testing young AI or aging AI would be hugely appreciated. And of course, I would like to ask the audience to just pause, think a little bit, and think about the implications of aging on their life and on the society as a whole. And then take another few minutes and think about how can you contribute to extending human longevity in every way, shape, or form. How to generate that one single quality-adjusted life year for everybody on the planet. And if you find a way that can add a minute, don't hesitate, just go and do it.
I couldn't have asked for a better way to finish this interview. Thank you very much. Very inspiring.
Thank you very much, and highly appreciate the interview.
It was a pleasure, Alex. And for everybody that is listening to this podcast, thank you for tuning in. I had the honor to speak to Alex Zavorontkov, CEO of InSilico Medicine. You can find more about Alex in a variety of way. First of all, you can go to Twitter, and the Twitter handle for Alex is @biogerontology. Second option, of course, is LinkedIn. And last but not least, you can also go to their website, which you can find at www.insilico.com. The goal of this podcast is to share compelling ideas and showcases to inspire what can be when technology and people blend in the right way. It's my strong belief that too much focus is put on automating people out of a process, in other words, cutting costs, rather than scenarios where the unique strength of people are augmented with technology to change the established rules and to deliver a value that was unimaginable before. So, with this podcast, I want to make a contribution to change this, to create a broader awareness of what can be, to accelerate the adoption by bringing together you, a tribe of like-minded people and organizations, and lastly, to accelerate the initiatives and solutions that could be created because one idea inspires the other. So if you know about stories that are worth sharing, please send me a message. Building the momentum all starts with revealing the ideas, and that starts with you. If you want to have more information, read my blogs, or obtain information on working with me, just visit me on my website, valueinspiration.com. Thank you for tuning in, and you could do me a big favor by rating the podcast or provide me with your feedback. I'll see you shortly in a new episode.